Welcome back. This is Bob Flynn and Frank Riccio. This is Attorney Flynn and Attorney Riccio. We're talking about the world of dental malpractice today. Frank, just before the break, you were talking about caps and margins, and we're not going to make ourselves, you're not going to make me a dentist or our listeners, but could you go back to that? We were talking about examples of medical error, dental error. Caps, margins, what are they? What does that lead to at times?
Sure. Well, I mean, basically what happens, and I'll kind of give you a typical example of a client where that happens. And crowns and bridges and prosthetic work has to be put in. It's very, very precise, which basically means that you have to have a complete seal between the tooth and the crown itself. If you don't have a seal, what happens is saliva and bacteria and sugars and everything else get under the crown, and they literally rot the tooth out from within. And so what happens is the bridge or the crowns or whatever fail. And so when they fail, it could end up with worse situations. That is, the teeth may need to be root canaled or they may need to be removed. And it ends up being huge costs for a client. For example, a typical case may be someone who went in to have crowns and bridges done as cosmetic dentistry. The crowns are put in with open margins. The teeth are decayed, and they may have paid about $20,000 for that. Now, because of the problems with the open margins, they have to have it all replaced, and usually the replacement is much more expensive. So now all of a sudden they're incurring costs of anywhere from $35,000 to $40,000 just to redo what should have been done right in the first place. And it's negligent to place a crown with an open margin. And even one crown on a 10-unit bridge, if placed with a open margin, can cause the whole entire case to fail. So, you know, that is an example of malpractice as it relates to crowns.
I don't want to frighten people, certainly from going to dentists. You should go twice a year, do your floss, do your brushing, do your rinsing and all that.
But, absolutely.
dental care is critical. And these things we're about to talk about, including that, are really very, very unusual, which makes them suspect and likely to be something that brings you to a lawyer. But what are some other examples of medical error that have happened in your experience with people?
Well, another
in dentistry.
Another fertile area is implants. And the thing with implants is that implants involve drilling a hole through the jaw and essentially placing a post, and then from that post or implant, you end up with a crown placed on it to replace a missing tooth. Most of the error that I see in my practice has to do with not really pre-planning and measuring the space that's necessary to place the implant. Especially in the lower jaw, you have what's known as the inferior alveolar nerve, which runs through the jaw. And if you place an implant that's too long, what you're going to do is cause injury to that, and that's going to present a problem with permanent numbness, typically to the lip. And so essentially what happens is you end up, and the injuries are pretty devastating because the lip is pretty large and it feels numb. You feel like you always have Novocaine, so half your mouth is feeling, whether you're drinking a cup of coffee or eating food, you're always feeling like you have that Novocaine and you really can't get rid of it. Many people talk about speech problems afterwards, drooling and that type of thing. And most of those situations, if not all, can be prevented by careful pre-implant planning. And typically what that involves is actually taking a CT scan before the implant is placed to make sure that you have the right amount of room in for the implant. And so, you know, if you're not pre-planning it correctly and you go too long, you're going to have an injury.
Now, one of the very common defenses that the lawyer is representing and the insurer is representing dentists will raise is, well, it was an inevitable, unfortunate medical result, not caused by anything the dentist did wrong. But do these kinds of things, in your experience, occur or should they occur with proper care?
No. Yes. I mean, with proper care, they shouldn't occur because that's the whole point. Whether it's an open margin, you should never place a crown with an open margin. And it's easy enough to check for that before you finally cement it. Same thing with an implant. If you do a CT scan, I mean, before you place the implant, you're going to have a three-dimensional view of that nerve, and you're going to know where it's located in relation to the bone. So it's they argue that, and they say that's the risk of the procedure. But if it's done properly, then, you know, these things should really be prevented.
And that's where the issue is in the case for lawyers.
That is where the issue is, and that's how they defend it. I mean, CT scans still are controversial pre-implant. They really shouldn't be because that's what the technology is. So unless you have been say you've had radiotherapy or something like that, it may not be indicated to have a CT scan in the sense that you're going to have more radiation, which is going to be cumulative. But in your typical person who's healthy having an implant, then to have a CT scan beforehand is really necessary. I mean, it's the injury is so bad, and that's, you know, 90% of what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to be causing harm to our patients. We're trying, if we have the technology available, we should at least give them that option of having it.
Yeah, first prevent no harm.
That is
cause
correct.
No harm. Right?
Yes.
What are some other examples in your experience of error cases?
Well, another area is failure to diagnose or oral cancer. I mean, that's actually a very serious situation. First of all, a good medical history is absolutely essential on all of your patients. Every time the patient comes in, there is a correlation, obviously, well, not obviously, but there is a correlation between alcohol, and smoking, and oral cancer. So you have to look at that. You have to consider that. If you see a lesion on the side of the tongue or in the what we call the oral mucosa, which is a fancy word for gums or tissue in the mouth, you just can't ignore it. What you have to do is, as a dentist, and dentists are all trained to do this, I'm not saying anything out of school, is you have to follow it. You can't assume it's benign. It most likely will be benign. I mean, canker sores can look like cancer, but the canker sore should go away within 10 days. So that means that there should be some type of follow-up. If a lesion is still present after 10 days, then the next step is to refer the patient to for a biopsy, because if you don't, and especially with oral cancer, it can spread fairly quickly, and it could be a situation that you could go from a local procedure to actually, you know, major surgery and even death because, you know, the prognosis is not as good. So, you know, the failure to diagnose cancer is probably a very, very important. All dentists, even dental hygienists, are trained to look for that.
So these are some examples of the problems, and there's more we can probably get to. But assume you have a potential client come in, somebody's patient, and one of these problems seems to have occurred, at least seems to that patient to have occurred, and that's why they come to see you. What's that first conference like? What do you talk about, generally speaking, and let people know?
Well, I think in general, of course, you want to get a history from the client. Typically, you know, it's like you would be a dentist taking a history. And then what you want to determine is what the nature of the harm is, because these cases are also economics driven. My firm takes these cases on a contingency fee, so we have to determine whether or not the damages are large enough to warrant taking the case and bringing it forward. And we use a couple of criteria to determine largeness, if you will. One of them is obviously the seriousness of the injury. Something like a nerve injury or cancer is obviously a large injury. But my firm also really focuses on the consumer part of it as well, and that is making sure that patients are compensated for, say, bridge work that wasn't done right the first time. And so what we will look at is we will look at, you know, how much are you going to have to pay to fix what was done by this dentist? And so these are, you know, that's a criteria that we also use. And, you know, from that we determine whether or not, at least financially, it's viable to pursue the case. Because if you pursue the case from a financial perspective, it's no different than a medical malpractice case. They're going to fight it. We're going to have to hire experts. It's the same process, except we call it dental instead of medical.
So a plaintiff who comes in, they're talking with you, and you're going over what happened as they understood it. And I suppose at some point you want to look at records, and in your case, you can eyeball those records, and you have a good idea of what actually happened.
Yeah, and what I'll do is when we get back from the break, what I'll do is I'll kind of explain to you how I personally do it because of my background as a dentist.
That sounds great. This is Frank Riccio and Bob Flynn talking about the law of dental malpractice. We'll be back right after the break.